Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 629. On the podcast today, I have technical analyst Nicola Duke charting the following stocks. These are stocks that have been requested. Metal Tiger, Regency Mines, Andalas Energy, Keffi Minerals, and Lloyds Banking Group. Plus, I have Simon French, Chief Economist at Panmure Gordon, talking about non-farm payrolls in the US elections, Brexit, Article 50, plus the Bank of England's raised forecast for inflation and economic growth. I also have today's suggested one for your watch list. By the way, I'm looking for submissions to this. This is the last one I have now in the pipeline. So if you know of a stock that you think should be on other people's watch lists, please go to voxmarkets.co.uk. /blog. Now you'll see one of my blog posts there. Scroll down, you'll see a link right at the bottom that says, "Do you know the stock that you think should be on other people's watch lists?" Then please click here and fill the form. It takes about 5 minutes, and I could be featuring it on Monday's podcast. All right, today's suggested one for your watch list is Motive Bio, MTFB, submitted by Sean. I'll go through the reasons why Sean reckons you should put this on your watch list in a bit. Also on the podcast, of course, I've got the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 7 days. Normally do 24 hours. This is the last 7 days. Plus, I have the top five most liked RNSs on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. And I've got to say, there's a joint number five. There's three companies in it, joint number five. So there's essentially, seven companies in today's list there. And I've got to say, the top one had a lot of likes and a lot of dislikes, but it did have more likes. So that's number one. I'll get to that in a bit.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin
Waite. It's a Friday, and so joining me is my regular Friday squeeze. It's Nicola Duke of the chart. You're right, Nick.
Hello. Yes, I'm all right. It's non-farm payroll Friday as well. This is a really scary week. Yes. You know, with the election, all of a sudden, you know, nobody wants dollars or assets, so everybody's trying to de-risk, I think, ahead of the election. And then the Fed didn't take away the risk of a rate hike in December, so I think that we could see some weakness in stocks between now and December, just because we've got all these factors. I don't think whoever wins the election, there are going to be people unhappy, and we could see one of those, you know, elections where it's contested afterwards and it goes to the courts and
nightmare. Yeah, the Trump has said that he, you know, if he would only be happy if he wins. If he loses, he'll contest it, which is a ridiculous thing. It's like a little school kid with his ball saying, "No, all right, I'm taking my ball home now. You can't play with it." I mean, it's ridiculous. And the thing is, not only that, I mean, we got sort of uncertainty on top of uncertainty. We got now yesterday, you know, the High Court ruling that Theresa May can't go ahead with Brexit without a parliamentary vote. You know, we've got all this happening. We've got obviously Bank of England coming out saying inflation is going to rocket next year. It's nuts. We are in the middle of a storm here, I think, and it will be, like I said, volatile for weeks. So
it was like that before, you know, when they had the contested election with Al Gore. For the whole time that was in front of the courts, that, you know, the markets didn't like it at all. So yeah, be defensive, people. Be defensive.
I think if Clinton smashes it, right, and she wins, you know, it'll be fine. But I mean, I think if it's close, Donald will contest it. You know, the Trump thing. Yeah. So it'll be a bit of a. But there we are. There we go. Okay.
It's very popular, I think, to think that Trump will win, and an awful lot of money has come into the bookies for Trump. Now, remember with Brexit, like, a lot of money came into the bookies, like it. I really believe that there are people in this market trying to put us off the scent. I think that Clinton probably will win, but they can spend very little money with bookmakers to push the odds of Trump winning higher and make it look like that's going to happen. And
But also, do you know what, though, was scary? Is this, I'm sort of liking this a little bit to the Brexit vote in such that people came out to vote for the Brexit vote that never voted before. They're completely disenfranchised by politics, you know. And I think Trump has quite a few supporters like that who would never normally make the vote. And so you may even see a surprise turnout in favour of him, which is a bit scary, I think, because these are the kind of people who say, yeah, we've got a chance here. We've never had a chance before in our life. You know, he's trying to have a voice for the smaller person. You know, the person who hates immigrants coming in or taking their jobs or believe they're taking their jobs. And that's very similar to the Brexit vote, where these people, you know, are not knocking them, just saying on council states, who blamed immigration for their situation. And that's the same kind of people in America who may get up and vote for the first time ever. You know, so it's a bit scary situation what's going on there, I think, anyway. But
very true. I think it'll make Brexit look like a rounding error if he wins.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be ugly.
Yeah, okay, let's get on to stocks suggested by the good public here, the UK. And first and foremost is Metal Tiger, MTR. It's had a bit of weakness recently on the charts, MTR. And where is it going to stop? And where's the support here on Metal Tiger, MTR? It's down at 2p now, I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, so Metal Tiger, between 2p and 1.85, there is a chance of a pretty good bounce support, but that's not a screaming buy level. And if you draw Fibonacci levels from the all-time lows, which I've taken as the 2002 lows, right down there at sort of, well, zero for a bit, wasn't it, originally, all the way to that spike high that we had in the start of the year. We've broken the 618 Fibonacci support pretty resoundingly. I think that means we'll go to the 786 next, which is those spike highs from March and the spike highs from 2014. So that's down at sort of 1.3, 1.37. Wow. So good chance of a bounce here. And a good chance of about sort of all the way back to the 200-day moving average and that previous support. So it's not too depressing. We would go from 2 and sort of 1.8 where we are now to 2.9. You know, that's a 50% rally. But I do think that there's a good chance we have another leg lower. And I would buy everything at around, you know, down 1.2, 1.3.
Yeah, but when you use Fibonacci and go back that far, is that relevant then? I mean, is it worth putting Fibonacci on a more recent time frame, or how does that work?
No, because you put it on, okay, so you put it on and you see if the market is respecting those levels. And this is just a daily chart, it's not a monthly chart. Mm. And every one of them, it has respected on the way down in like a stair climb between the levels. So, yes, I do think they work. I do think other people are looking at them. So, yeah.
Okay, I respect you, Mr. Fibonacci.
If we take away the Fibonacci, we can say we're well below the 200-day moving average. We are trending lower, and there's no sign of no price action at all to suggest a bottom yet. So wait for some.
Okay,
you know, and it always makes a bottoming pattern. Even if it's on a 4-hour chart, it'll make a little double bottom, or you know, it'll do something to say we're holding on, and it's not doing that.
Yeah, okay. All right, the next one is suggested Regency Miners, RGM. What do you reckon on the chart, Regency Miners?
Yeah, do you know, Regency Miners, it doesn't look very pretty because it's failed at this pivot level at 0.6 and potentially it's a double top. But for the whole of September, when we got above the 200-day moving average, we've sort of held on and, you know, we keep trying to push away above it. You know, the oscillator says we're close to bottoming, but potentially we've got a double up top at 0.6. So if you look at the mid-September low, the double top would be confirmed if we trade below 0.413. And that would then say we're going back to the low lows, which would be pretty disappointing lows for the year.
Low.
I would say if you're long of this, you know, get out if it goes below 0.41. But otherwise it does have it's just consolidating. And as long as we keep trying to hold on to the 200-day, see where we close today relative to it, because we're right on it right now, it still has a chance.
Okay, lovely. All right. The next one is ADL, Andalas Energy. It's announced a little deal today, or the start of a deal with Pertamina. Yeah. ADL is at 0.1. It's just, in fact, I'm looking at the chart now, it was up on this morning, then it went down. It was up like about 4%, then it went down, and now it's flat at 0.1175. So what do you reckon there?
Yeah, I'm looking at it. You know, so it has quite a good chance of at least an ABC, an equal measured move rally here to back to retest the lows from August, which is 0.135. So I think if you're looking at it, that it's got a good chance of getting up to 0.135. Mm-hmm. But if it stalls and if it fails there, get out. Don't be a hero, because I think that the likelihood is it makes another leg lower and keeps going lower.
Okay.
One more push lower. But so that's, you know, so you could buy it speculatively here. Your stop would need to be below 0.109, because that's where the 127 fib is, and there's a chance we go there. And then watch and see what it does when it gets back to those previous lows at 0.135. If we can get above them, then we've bottomed and we're going to keep going. But if we fail there again, the trend is still down.
Okay, all right, that's endless. Okay, next one is Keffi Minerals. Now, I tweeted out a chart on this, right? And I cut the chart at, where was it, the 27th or 28th of the 5th, or basically the 1st of June there. I said, sometimes fundamental break technicals, you know, and because if you cut the chart up to June, it looked good. Everything was happening. The moving averages were coming up, the 20-day, 50-day, and 125 were crossing across the 200-day moving average. It all looked good. And then all of a sudden, it started going wrong. And so now we're down at 0.362. So, you know, what's happening here? What is going on with the chart?
Yeah, I think that Keffi has a chance. I don't see new lows for Keffi. It's potentially got support here at 0.344, which was the lows in September. And I think that we should at least bounce from there back to retest 0.423, which was the summer lows. The only thing is, you know, we have to say, well, the trend is lower. So your stop needs to be below the September lows. If it came back to 0.3 mm-hmm. or 0.29, I think it's a screaming buy there, because I just don't see new lows for this. I think we're going to get at least another leg lower, and my upside target for this one is 0.68. So we take out those previous highs from the summer. But it's just not clear to me whether we're going to go from here or just a little bit lower. But I like this one. It's one to watch.
Yeah,
the price action and the oscillator and everything says to me that this could quite well be it here. So
yeah, okay. Well, do you know what? Fundamentally, they're looking for funding to get this, and they're in gold, you know, so they need to. So the gold price is good on one hand. On the other hand, they said they'd have this funding sort of sorted, and it's protracted a little bit, and they pushed out the timeline of their development of the mine and all that stuff, so production. So it's had a bit of a hit on the share price. All right, so yeah. Let's go.
So how would we know this one is going and has bottomed here? I would say if it gets back above 0.4, which is also the 20-day moving average, then it's on its way, and okay. It's going to continue to push higher. So put a price alarm at 0.4 for Keffi.
All right, lovely stuff. And the last one is a biggie, suggested by, I don't know who suggested it, but it's Lloyds, LLOY, Lloyds Banking Group. What's that mean? Yeah, bunch of, oh, it's just come off the, yeah, it's, I don't know, I've seen so many charts that are sort of domestically based, big companies like this that have gapped down around the June level at Brexit vote, and then they're bumping along the bottom, you know, so many companies. But
You know what? Lloyds looks better than a lot of them that I've looked at today. And I looked at quite a lot of big stocks trying to find something that I really liked. And it doesn't look too bad. So we've, you know, this week, you know, we had a pretty good 3-week rally. And then this week we've just gone sideways. But we've gone sideways inside that 3-week rally. I think that if we break above, we're at 55.50 now. If we get above 57.75, we're going to make another complete leg higher to 63 at least. And so I quite like this. I think this has a good chance to do that. The problem has been, you know, for a lot of these big stocks has been the pound. Yeah. The pound has had a bit of a rally, and it's been really quite tough downward pressure. But yeah, 55.50 is quite a good support level. I think it has a good chance to make another push higher.
Yeah, well, do you know what? On a fundamental level, right, now, when you had the Bank of England come out yesterday, and they are tripling their estimate for inflation next year, and that's apparently a bit conservative. That's quite conservative. So you would suggest then that interest rates will go up, which then gives banks more leverage on earning power. this could be, you know, now fundamentally, especially in Lloyd's, is a, you know, big domestic mortgage owner, this could be a good time to sort of maybe scale in or look about doing some research, because, you know, when interest rates go up, banks have more headroom to earn money there, basically. So it could be a good move now. There's these levels to start thinking about getting into sort of banks, you know? I may be talking to the side of my neck, but there we are.
No. I quite like Lloyd. I quite like Lloyd's. I think it has quite a good chance, and it should go to at least 63.50 from here.
Lovely. Are you celebrating fireworks night, Nicola, anyway?
I am not.
Excellent. Well, have a nice week.
I've got a dog who thinks the world is ending and hides in the wardrobe crying. So.
I feel sorry for the pets there. But of course, I mean, it marks basically, well, at least domestically, the world was going to end for the Parliament if Guy Fawkes had got his way and blown up Parliament. I couldn't believe it. I read about that because my son came home and I read about it. And the guys, they wanted to get a Catholic king back on the throne, you know, that's what it was all about. And they leased basically storage under the Houses of Parliament. You just went in there and leased it. I mean, you know, is there an empty room there? You imagine the security these days. You could never do that. You know, lease a building underneath the Parliament and just keep storing gunpowder. that was nuts. It didn't even work out there. So anyway. Nick, thanks very much. You send me the charts and I'll put them on voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. You can see those charts as annotated by the fair and lovely hands of Nicola Duke. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chief Economist at Panmure Gordon, Simon French. All right, Simon.
Good morning. How are you, Justin?
Yeah, I'm good. And it's been a hive of activity in the macro picture, especially if UK-based. Well, I suppose also, you know, over the pond there in America, we've got the uncertainty of the elections. But last couple of days, there's been a lot of data out, hasn't there?
There's been an awful lot of data. So let's start over in the US, and we've got later today the non-farm payrolls, which ought to be another bit of data for the Fed to consider ahead of the expected decision now that they raise US interest rates for the first time this year at their December meeting. I think what's worth looking at on this is the fact that the minutes from their last meeting, or the most recent meeting, talked about some data. They only need to see some positive data to complete the picture to make that rate rise. So I think it's going to take a pretty dire number on the non-farm payrolls this afternoon to push the Fed off course now.
Yeah, okay. And in this country, I mean, we had a lot of news yesterday, actually, from the Bank of England and around the Brexit thing. What do you want to go with? What do you want to chat about?
Yeah, it was a big day, so we'll break it up into two, shan't we? So first of all, we had that ruling from the High Court, and what they were doing was pointing out to government that it couldn't use what is known as the Crown prerogative to trigger Article 50. Basically, the Crown prerogative means that the government of the day could start Article 50 or trigger Article 50 without having to have a vote in Parliament, without having to have any legislation. Now, the High Court has ruled, and this is subject to appeal in the Supreme Court later in the year, that actually, no, something like Article 50 is irrevocable. You start the clock ticking for 2 years, and at the end of that 2 years, you leave the European Union. And their ruling is you can't start doing irrevocable changes to a UK law without having a parliamentary vote on it. Now, I guess the good news for the government is that they will probably win a parliamentary majority, win the parliamentary vote, certainly in the Commons, question marks over what will happen in the Lords. But of course, this just derails the timetable, or should derail the timetable they're aiming for triggering in March 2017. And yet, Theresa May, of course, is meeting with Juncker today to try and put some assurances to him that she's sticking to her plans, sticking to her timeline.
Yeah, which I suppose, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, well, listen, the MPs will not overrule this because it's the will of the people, the majority of the people that voted to leave, so they can't start now. Because Britain would go into chaos if that happened, wouldn't it?
I think you're right, and most MPs are what you would call pragmatic Brexiteers now. They recognise that while ahead of the vote they were probably on a two-thirds majority campaigning for Remain. They now recognise that their constituents have spoken and they are the representatives of their constituents, and therefore they're unlikely to vote down party lines or their pre-referendum sort of statements on this subject, much more likely to represent, if they have any sense, if they, unless they're turkeys voting for Christmas, they're going to vote down the lines their constituency voted. And there it is much more strongly in favour of Leave, and therefore she doesn't. Theresa May doesn't have a problem in the House of Commons. She potentially has a problem in the Lords, looking for amendments to any act that is put forward. And crucially, and I think this is at the, really at the heart of this, government is desperate to avoid a public negotiation between its own MPs, between lawmakers, on what Brexit actually means. They've got this Brexit means Brexit that is kind of a holding line, which of course means everything and means nothing. And as soon as you have a debate, you start to ask, you know, not unreasonable questions of, well, so what's your attitude to, you know, for free trade, migration, the crucial issues, the rule of law, parliamentary sovereignty, the kind of stuff that the thinking hasn't got to having an answer to. That is going to be a problem.
Yeah, I do like that when she came out with a definitive, almost, you know, very positive, Brexit means Brexit. The question was, yeah, what does that mean? I've no idea. It's like, we don't actually know what it means, but it means Brexit.
So you have a series of politicians tripping over themselves by saying breakfast means breakfast, rather than Brexit means Brexit.
I know it's
difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the thing is, that the fact is, they do know what breakfast means. No one knows really what Brexit means, you know? So that's why they're tripping over themselves, probably.
They certainly know what Brexit means in the heavily subsidised House of Commons restaurant.
Exactly.
That's for sure.
And the final thing, the Bank of England yesterday, I suppose, came out and a couple of things. They've tripled their forecast, almost tripled, for inflation, haven't they?
They have. 2.7% is the forecast for inflation at the end of 2017, the end of next year, which, of course, is above their 2% target. And actually is probably lowballing it compared to some of the external forecasters out there, myself included, that thinks you're much more likely to see it beginning with a 3 rather than a 2 this time next year. And that's significantly above the inflation target. Now, what was crucial, I think, was the Bank of England guided to being fairly comfortable with not having to raise interest rates to head off what they see as temporary sterling-led inflation. But I think the key issue is if they start to see that inflation level tick higher and be sustained for longer, are we going to be in a position where the Bank of England is going to have to consider raising rates to try and fend off an inflationary spiral? I think it's unlikely, but certainly in the short run, they've given a guidance to markets that there's no further interest rate cut or QE coming, but equally they're not anticipating going higher. So they're going to be sitting on their hands for some time to come, a stance we've been familiar with over the last 8 or so years.
Yeah, but they also mentioned that, which is quite nice, I mean, they raised forecast for growth, was it, to 1.4 from 0.8, and then but then it's coming down a little bit, I think, for the 2018, that's, isn't it? Yeah,
that's right. And that reflects the fact that when they did their August inflation report, we just had those, and I remember talking to you about this at the time, Justin, the very negative PMIs, purchasing manager indexes, from for the July period, which of course suggested that the UK economy was on the verge of contracting and a fairly severe contraction. Now, with the benefit of hindsight, those were fairly misleading pictures on what was actually going on. And since then, we've had much more upbeat output data. And therefore, there's been that big reversal in the growth trend. But I think you're right to say it's pain not necessarily averted, but pain delayed while we kind of go through the process of Article 50 and we understand and we actually leave the European Union. I think they're much more worried about the medium term rather than the short term impact. You know, easy to throw mud at the Bank of England on a day like today when they've had to reverse their calls so aggressively. But they, like everyone else, were trying to make sense of the UK economy in an aftermath to what is a really sort of decade defining event, economic event, they didn't have an awful lot of data to go on, and the data they had back in August wasn't painting the rosiest of pictures.
I think it's near enough impossible to predict 2 years out, you know? I mean, exactly with all the changes happening at the moment. And also, Carney, next year, if he has to predict 2 years out, he can just say, listen, I don't care, I'm not going to be here, you know?
Well, he is going to be here, let's not forget.
2019, isn't
that? That's right. So he has the best part of 3 years still run. But of course, you're right to bring up that other big story of the week, which is Mark Carney's future. I don't think it materially impacts the MPC's policy, particularly regarding your first comment on inflation. He, like Eddie George and Mervyn King before him, really have been fairly comfortable with looking through bouts of inflation that are the result of higher commodity prices or higher sterling. What they only really respond to is signs of wage inflation and what's known as core inflation. And when they start to see that getting out of control, that's when they go into tightening mode. So be it Carney, be it Ben Broadbent, be it Andrew Bailey, be it, you know, some people have mentioned Governor Kuroda being the next governor of the Bank of England, whoever it may be, I expect that they would show exactly the same behavioural function.
Yeah, okay. And this time next week, we'll know who will be the president, I assume, of the US.
That's right. And of course, markets are increasingly focusing on the seemingly narrowing opinion polls, particularly in those crucial 4 to 6 swing states that are up for grabs. And by this time next week, we will know. I think, you know, a lot of the market pricing that is going on is on the anticipation that it's going to be a lot closer than people were factoring just a couple of weeks ago. And certainly the reopening of that FBI investigation feels like a bit of a turning point, a bit potentially like those immigration numbers were a turning point in the Brexit debate when we had that 330,000 net migration number. The momentum all shifted towards to Brexit and away from, or towards Leave and away from Remain. It feels like that FBI investigation could be that same moment. Now, of course, the downside to the S&P is estimated somewhere between 10 and 15%, something that will be replicated on the FTSE. That's the best estimate of what would happen if we got a surprise Trump victory. So very material, and you can forgive some investors for taking some money off the table.
Yeah, do you know, I can't envisage the US with Trump as president. I just think, how did we get in this situation? And I'm just saying, I was reading today actually about his wife, and she got a green card on her extraordinary ability, apparently, as in brackets, as a model. And so I thought, listen, he's not against immigration as long as they're female and attractive, you know?
This is an interesting point, isn't it? And the problem, actually, to the element of that from an economic policy perspective is, does he have a consistent economic doctrine to fall back on? Because he's said so many things and he's done so many things, both in his private, his personal, his business life, that are contradictory. How do you try and price up what impact he's going to have on the, you know, preeminent global economy, and how much of it will be rhetoric and how much of it will be action? I think what we all do is we get ourselves that red cap, we stick it on the election night and hope that it'll be just, it won't have to be kept on for the next 4 or 8 years, but put it in the drawer shortly afterwards.
Yeah, you can't price it up. What you do, I mean, it's quite appropriate. It's like fireworks day. It's like lighting a firework. You light it and stand back and see what happens. That's all you can do. That's it. Si, thanks very much. Speak next week.
Cheers, Justin. Bye-bye.
Okay, it's time for today's suggested one for your watch list. It's Motive Bio, MTFB's ticker. Now, like I said, everything on this podcast is an idea, all right? Don't go investing anything based solely on the content of this blog or this podcast. Please do your own research. It's a stepping stone to doing your own research. So this information is submitted by Sean. What does the company do? Motive Bio is a clinical stage biopharmaceutical company which specializes in development of novel antibiotics designed to be effective against serious and life-threatening infections caused by multi-drug-resistant bacteria. And I know this is an issue. I did hold these for a while. And I know there's increasing resistance to multi-drug-resistant bacteria. Ilkaprim, its leading drug, is being developed for the treatment of the most common and serious bacteria infections, including MRSA. How many shares does the company have in issue? 109 million. What's the current price and market cap? Share price 37 pence, market cap 40 million. What revenue and profit loss does the company generate? No revenue. For 6 months ended the 30th of June 2016, they lost $14 million. How much cash or debt does the company have? As of June the 30th, 2016, the company had cash and equivalents of approximately $19.5 million, and their loan, as far as debt is concerned, of $3.8 million, as stated in their interims. So there's three reasons why people should add this company to their watch list. They are applying to be floated on the NASDAQ, where similar companies, e.g. Paratek Pharmaceuticals, whose own similar stage antibiotic development, same stage here, but it lacks Ilkaprim's exceptional safety data, is valued at four times that of Motibio. Reason two, two RNSs out recently confirmed exceptional progress being made with its lead antibiotic, Ilkaprim. And number three, the shares are at an all-time low due to funding measures worries, but should they sort this out, which they should do, the SP will fly, the share price will fly. So like I said, listen, do your own research. There's a lot of info there. And that's Motibio MTFB. Thank you very much, Sean, for submitting that. If you know of a company that you think other people should put on their watch list because it has potential, then please fill in the form, as this feature is kept alive by your input. So I do appreciate if you do that. Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 7 days. They are at five, Andalas Energy, ADL. At four, Talau Energy, TLOU. At three, Upland Resources. At two, Prairie Mining, PDZ. And at number one, yeah, it's been there for most of the week. So normally I do a daily most followed count here. This is the weekly, and it's been there sort of, I think, 3 days out of five, pretty much. Oxford Pharma Science, OXP, most followed company on the website in the last 7 days. All right, here are the top five most liked RNSs on the Vox Markets website this morning, and there's one actually from late yesterday afternoon. So at five, it's joint third, joint fifth position, I should say. Strategic Minerals, appointment of Redmore Community Advisor. Also PCG Entertainment, trading update at five as well. And also joining that position, or in that position as well, is Iron Ridge Resources, significant gold intersections at May Queen. At four, it is Management Resource Solutions, MRS, misses deferred consideration payment and update on trading. At three, Ascent Resources, recertification of export production pipeline. At two, the second most liked RNS this morning was Buckley Energia, that's BKY ticker, proposed placing to raise $25 to $30 million. And I think it was a share price, wasn't that much a great discount? It's run about the level it is now, I think, or just a little bit below. And at number one, it was the most liked and disliked RNS. It had about, I don't know, it wasn't a lot in it, but certainly the most liked. It was Andalas Energy Gas to Power Update. So that's it, top five most liked RNSs on the Vox Markets website this morning. Thank you very much for listening to the podcast this week. Hopefully there will be a weekend podcast coming up. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.